Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. But today we're going to be adding a little bit to that subject matter. We're going to be talking about something just about everybody here that is listening is very familiar with, and that is the holy cell phone. Now, I'm being a little sarcastic, but with good reason. The cell phone, which hasn't been around really all that long, now we've got so that we're almost like Captain Kirk of Star Trek. We haven't quite gotten to the place where we wear a button, where we tap it and communicate with whoever and whatever we want. Well, we're getting closer. But the cell phone has brought into our environment all kinds of, well, what do I want to say, irritants? And we need to become aware of etiquette with a cell phone. You think? Have you ever observed there's certain actions and behaviors on the part of people? Well, we're going to be talking with a gentleman who says, put the cell phone down and look me in the eye. He feels that we need to understand what conversation is like, number one, and respect certain protocols when it comes to the use of the cell phone. I want to welcome my guest today, Brian Haggerty. Brian, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Donna, and it's such a pleasure to speak with you today.
You know, Brian, you're a man that is with the public constantly. You are a speaker. You have been involved in business, politics. You've just been involved in a lot of things for a long time. I'm sure you carry a cell phone with you everywhere you go. Am I correct?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. This is a necessary tool in business.
It certainly is.
Why did you decide you were going to take on a topic that could easily irritate people? Say, who's this guy? He's in business. He has to carry a cell phone all the time. Who is he that he thinks he should tell us what to do with his cell phone?
Well, it all had begun, actually, several years ago while I was still in public office in my home community here in Lyndhurst, New Jersey. And I had begun to teach a series of business and social etiquette courses. Pretty much just trying to bring people's awareness back to the necessary need for civility and conversation and to make a good impression on people, because those are the things that will allow us to succeed in business and in life. And over that period of years, as cell phones became more advanced, I noticed a growing epidemic that was taking place, whereby nobody was looking around anymore. Everybody was looking at their cell phone. And worse, when you're speaking to someone, rather than they're looking at you, they're looking down at their cell phone. And I said, this is a major problem. It's a growing epidemic, and it is becoming a very, very bad habit in society with horrible ramifications for our future.
I agree, and I'll have to share with you a couple of real-life stories. I have a very good friend who works in a local post office, and she had a gentleman come in, and he's on the cell phone, and he's talking. Her name is Mary, and Mary looked at him. She said, excuse me. You hang up on the cell phone, you put it away, and you communicate with me. If you're not willing to do that, leave your place in line, go to the end of the line, and wait again. The man was furious with her, and she looked him straight in the eye, and she said, if you aren't willing to pay attention to what you're doing right here and right now, I don't want to waste my time.
Well, good for her.
She never had anybody talk to her like that. She thought her boss was probably going to absolutely turn livid, but actually her boss, who is a mature woman, and Mary's a mature woman too, but I know her telling me this story. She said, Donna, I have these men and these women that come in, and they're just yada, 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 yada. We're talking business. I'm dealing with their money. I need information from them, and they are ignoring me. They are in this world, and she said, here are all these people standing in line. They don't want to listen to these people's conversations. This is big problem.
It is. And what's happening is people are becoming far more self-absorbed and far less self-aware. Now, what's interesting is about this whole cell phone thing is that anytime I give a talk, I always start off with a poll. I guess that's the politician in me. And I ask the audience, how many times or how many of you, when you are speaking to someone, have that person, instead of looking at you, checking their cell phone? And they all raise their hand. And then I say, now, how does that make you feel? And they all say, oh, it's terrible, it's rude, I want to slap it out of their hand. I say, all right, very good. I say, but now let me ask you this question. Have any of you, while someone is speaking to you, been checking your cell phone? And all of a sudden, the light bulb goes off, and they all admit it. They raise their hand. And I say, very interestingly, we don't like it when it's done to us. We think it's rude. But we are doing it unconsciously because we have formed a habit, and it's a very bad habit. And what happens with our habits, both good and bad, is that when we engage in any behavior long enough, we begin to do it without even thinking about it. So I wonder if that gentleman in the post office in line would have appreciated if your friend were actually looking at her cell phone while he was trying to conduct and transact business with her. And I'm sure he wouldn't have. He would have been furious. He would have probably said something himself. But it's a very bad habit, and it is actually, it's eroding our people skills. And people skills have always been the number one precursor to success in business because they involve how we relate to people, our communication skills, our nonverbal skills as well. And what's happening now, we're sending very strong nonverbal messages to people when they're speaking to us and we're looking at our cell phone. We're basically saying to someone, you're not important. What you're saying to me doesn't matter. I'm more interested in what's going on down here. And that is very dangerous.
Well, more than that, I think there's another side. You are so intent on what you are involved with that phone, that you're not really, and it's the same with texting. And believe me, I love technology. I'm very grateful for a cell phone.
Sure.
However, I think that your points are very well stated. But there is the other side that really concerns me. And I'll use your word, self-absorption. And I look at how trivial things are becoming so super enlarged, so blown out of context, that people are actually having difficulty with problem solving because they don't know how to distance themselves from little mediocre things. I find this a fascinating phenomena. And one of the points that you have in your book, which, by the way, addresses a lot, many different subjects. It's not just cell phones. It's dealing with business, period. And this is a conversation I often have with people that are in business. They get very concerned because they have young people that come in where they have not been educated, number one, on dress, but it's even happening with the older generation. I think if we have to be an example, we need to be example of the finest and best, and if we can't, then we can't blame the young people. They have to have an example to follow.
That's right.
So that's where we have to start. But when you don't set barriers or you don't set protocols or you don't understand what's necessary in business, it really is a challenge. And technology is meant to serve us. We're not supposed to become blind slaves to it. One of the points that you bring out in your book is personal responsibility. Now, that may sound a little strange when the title is Put Your Cell Phone Down and Look Me in the Eye, but this is part of business. This is part of civility. This is part of understanding personal responsibility.
It is. And Donna, you bring up such great points because technology is a wonderful thing in and of itself. But like with all things in life, we must have balance. And the balance requires us having self-discipline to know when we can look at that cell phone when it's appropriate and to know when we should put it on silent and put it in our pocket. Because if we get out of balance, then we're not going to know what the right thing to do and the wrong thing to do in any situation comes about. And all we're doing is we're hurting our chances of being successful in business because you're treating people very rudely when you do that. But you're losing your communication skills. And I think one of the problems I see with today, the fact that the cell phone is now really your personal computer because you could access the entire universe on your cell phone. Mm-hmm. And what I see happening is that we are becoming not only addicted to this, but we're becoming addicted to it because it is so stimulating. I mean, imagine that someone is going through their news feed on Facebook. You go through it, and all of a sudden, you're going to find a story that makes you laugh. Ha, 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 very funny, you know. Then you're going to go a little further, and you're going to see a story that makes you mad. Rawr, that's, I don't like that. Then you'll scroll a little bit further, and you'll read a post that makes you very sad. So never before have we been in an era where these types of stimulating events are at our fingertips, and we are so drawn into it that we begin to forsake the reality in which we live and the people around us purely because we are addicted to what's going on in the cyber world. And interestingly, there's really never anything that interesting going on, but we are so addicted to it, it's like reading newspaper headlines or watching a soap opera. I think what it boils down to is our sense of drama. Human beings have always been so attracted to drama, and now you can have all of that drama and that stimulation right at your fingertips. And if you keep doing that, you're going to lose complete touch with reality. You're going to lose friendships. You're going to lose the ability to interact with human beings on a level playing field that society has always known and was always built upon, to the point where now we're losing a generation, and if we don't put the brakes on and raise people's awareness to say, you don't have to throw your cell phone away. We're not against technology. What we are saying is that it needs to be in balance, and we need to have self-control, become self-aware of how our words, deeds, and actions are affecting others, and become less self-absorbed, lest we lose our society.
And I think that, again, you bring up such excellent points. There's so much that's a benefit of the technology. We're able to get information about places around the world that 5 years ago, it wasn't possible to get this information in 30 seconds. I'm watching television, and some person in one of these war-torn countries who's got enough money, they've got a drone, and they have sent a drone out showing exactly what's going on. The government didn't know about it, but here's this drone with its camera, and it's being broadcast to stations via satellite that are here in the United States, and within seconds, it's uploaded and it's put on, and we're seeing what's happening worlds away. But what is fascinating here is that when you get into that and you come back, you have to come back to reality at some point in time. At some point in time, there is going to be a flash and burn. This is not going to be fun when you go through it, because then you're going to have to deal with the realities of life. I was just reviewing some material on a woman who, her and her husband in Colorado, when they had those devastating fires, within a matter of minutes, their entire life was in ashes. And that trauma, cell phone, no cell phone, it doesn't make any difference. These things can happen. Things can happen with loved ones. There's so many things that can affect your life. And being able to deal with the realities of life mean that you have to be a participant. You have to be present. You have to see it. It's so easy to make judgments. And I think we have created a pseudo-reality that people like to escape into rather than looking at the realities of life. That when you go, for example, on an interview, you make sure that that phone is turned off. You don't have a concern if your girlfriend or boyfriend is calling you or whoever is calling you and they're standing in a grocery store wondering what kind of detergent to buy. That is not the primary purpose of where you are. You've got to be present with where you are. You have to communicate with people. And you and I being in business, and we're all in the business of life on one level or another, the communication is so important. And sometimes you only have a few seconds with someone. And those few seconds can speak volumes. But learning to be a good listener means that you do exactly that. Learning to be a good observer means you do exactly that. And I think sometimes we just need to maybe turn everything off for periods of time and just take a walk in the park and find out what's really going on. Smell things, be aware of things. I know it sounds rather hokey, but we've got to be able to touch reality. People are walking around, especially so many in the younger generation, not understanding, gee whiz, if they fall down, they can get hurt. It's an amazing It's an amazing cycle. It's dealing with money. Oh, well, that's all right. All I'll do is everything's electronic. It's fine. What if the system goes down? What if you don't have access to it? It's a fascinating reality of sorts that we have created that really isn't real.
No, it's not. In fact, I think the problem, you hit on it right there, is the awareness. People aren't self-aware anymore. And what I've always found is that everybody expects to be treated with respect. They expect others to be kind to them. They want to be accepted. They want their opinions heard and valued. These are all the things that all of humanity would wish to see being demonstrated to them. But as I always say in my talks, that we cannot expect these things to be shown toward us if we are not willing to demonstrate them to others. So I always implore the fact that we must embody all of the greatness that we would want to see in humanity, because everybody does want to have a better society, a better world. We want to have peaceful and solid relationships. We want to be successful and pursue our dreams. And what's happening is we are being so addicted to technology that we are losing that touch with reality. We're becoming more self-absorbed. We're losing self-awareness. And we're not aware of how our actions, our words, our deeds, our behaviors are affecting others. And I think that if we return to that awareness, and that if people learn the value of investing in yourself, investing in your own, your grammar, your speech, your communication skills, the manner in which you dress, the manner in which you treat others, and how to handle yourself professionally, and most important, the foundation of it all, to have strong character. Because today, you probably notice in business, late seems to be the new normal. I mean, how often today when you meet with people for an appointment, let's say, set for 1 o'clock, they're showing up at 10 after, 1:15, sometimes 1:30. They have access to technology that they can contact you and tell you that they're late. In often cases, they don't do that. So that's an element of character that is eroding. We have people who are consistently not of their word. They promise you they're going to deliver or have something for you by a certain time. That time comes and goes, and you don't get what was promised. And when we do that, we begin to establish a very poor reputation. Instead, what we should be doing is focusing on building our own personal brand, no different from a company, no different from a product, so that when people hear our names, they know exactly what to expect. And it's very easy to be of your word. It's very easy to be on time. Those are choices we can make. They don't require intellect. You don't have to have gone to a university to learn how to do that. Those are done by becoming aware of how important those things are in our lives, how that affects others, how that affects their perception of us and ultimately our reputation, and how it all comes together to form our own personal brand. Because not only does that make us successful in business, it makes us successful as human beings, and it helps us work together to build the type of society that we would all wish to live in. And that's a society of civility and respect where we think about others before we think about ourselves.
Brian, I have a personal experience within my own family with a gentleman who is very professional. He's an excellent businessman. And years ago, someone taught him a very important lesson about being late. This is a man that was always, I mean, big time late. We're talking on the first date he ever had with his wife, he was an hour and a half late.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, this is someone that always was late. This was his M.O. Well, his wife was just going crazy with it. And then out of the blue, he had a business meeting with a group of gentlemen. And this was out in a locale. And he had about, oh, I'd say about an hour's drive to get there. And he ended up being well over an hour late. And there was a cell phone. He didn't call. He didn't do anything like that. And he shows up. Well, one of the gentlemen that was sitting in the meeting said to this family member, "We have our meeting," and all these other people, there were about four or five of them that were waiting for him. And after the meeting was done, this friend of his pulled him aside. And he said, "I don't want to hear about your reason for being late. But I'm going to say this to you once. You showed such disrespect for the people that were interested in you and what you wanted to present to them for you to do this is totally out of line. If you want people, and I will use your word, Brian, respect. If you want people to respect you and what you do, be on time. You have no excuse, unless there's something major that goes on. You knew about this meeting. You knew the time it was. You knew exactly how long it would take you here. You could have been here on time. And that hit him so hard. Someone finally, after years of this kind of habit, just laid it out there for him. He still has a little bit of a patterning for that. But it really woke him up, because the person that said this to him, he had a great deal of respect for. But they just laid it out.
Well, and he is very lucky.
He is. He is, because just as you said earlier, habits are something that we get into. It's very, very easy to do. But we have to be mindful that we can change those habits. And it's the same thing with the communication factor. When you have someone that really is wanting to spend time with you, I think like a friend of mine did at a big family reunion, they had like over 100 people. Everyone that came in, because this was held at a hotel, they had rented a very large room. He stood at the door. Every single person that came in, he had a big bucket. He said, your cell phone is going in this bucket. And the young people just about came unglued. Oh, I can't. And he said, it's going in here. This is a family reunion. You don't want to do that, then you go back. Don't waste your time being here, because this is a reunion of family. We're going to talk to each other. And you are going to leave those cell phones in this bucket for 2 hours. You're going to have to communicate. And do you know what? He had more than one person come up and say, thank you for doing that. But he did it with the adults as well as the kids.
Sure.
Made all the difference in the world. People were talking to each other, for heaven's sakes.
Imagine that.
And sharing their stories. Now, this is also a part of the aspect of your book, because you really enjoy people coming across with an air of self-confidence. You want them to know that who they are is significant, very important. And there are many points of etiquette, that I would say that you bring out in your book and in the business environment. But one of the topics you cover is the fact that how you present yourself really does make a difference. And it's important to become educated about this. Not to go along with whatever the movie stars are wearing, but to be aware your conduct is extremely important and how you present yourself is extremely important. We've gotten away from a lot of this. I was having a conversation with someone about an airline and their flight attendant, and I said, it's really sad to me because it's as if their status of dress has deteriorated. I look at so many components that have gotten very sloppy. It's almost as if there's not a sense of pride. It's as if there has been a promotion of it doesn't make any difference. It does make a difference. It makes a statement about the company. Why are people so reticent to look at that?
It makes a statement about the company, but it makes a statement more important about yourself. And I actually stopped wearing jeans and sneakers, believe it or not, in the seventh grade. I only kept a pair of sneakers for whenever I would go to the gym. Mm-hmm. But I always felt that T-shirts, sweatshirts, jeans, sweatpants, baseball caps, you look like an ordinary person. And if you want to be an extraordinary individual, if you want to be taken seriously, if you want to, in fact, studies have been done to prove this, that when you walk into a place of business, if you are well-dressed, they will attend to you, assuming that you are someone who is successful already, because you give off the impression of success, of pride, and of personal appearance. And it all goes back to our personal brand. Do we or do we not want to establish a brand of such that when people hear our name, they think of all of the positive things about us, that we are reliable, that we're of our word, that we dress appropriately, that we are someone who can be counted upon, that we're kind and respectful. That is the type of thing that everybody wants to see in others. But yet, they don't have the self-awareness and don't invest the time in establishing their own brand with people. And unfortunately, what's happening today, as you say, when you look at Hollywood and you see the way people are dressing, people just don't dress well anymore. And I find this to be detestable. I could never stand this. I think one of the problems we miss today is that we have lost sight of the separation between a public and a private persona. And what that means is, you know, years ago when you went outside, when you left your home, you were put together. You were well-dressed. Men wore hats. Ladies wore gloves. Everybody was dressed well. You look at old pictures, and everybody's in a suit and tie. Now, I'm not saying that today everybody needs to wear a suit and tie, wear a hat, ladies wear gloves. I'm not saying that, because we have modern fashions today that are perfect for today's setting if you want to be well-dressed. But when you did that years ago, you were showing your respect for society, for the public, for others. If you were an adult, you were recognizing the role you play in modeling behavior for younger people. When you went to church, when you went to a wake, when you went to any public ceremony, people knew what to do. They knew how to dress. They removed their hats when they walked in somewhere. They removed sunglasses when they would shake someone's hand to meet someone. They knew how to shake someone's hand and how to have a conversation with people. And all of this is eroding away. So the few people who are left who are still valuing these traits and skills and who are demonstrating them are the people who are establishing a very powerful brand. And it is they who will become successful. And success is available for anyone who wishes to achieve it. And I think that if I can raise the awareness of the public to understand that the role we play as a member of society coincides with our successful desires in life, and that when we pull them all together, we can build a better society one person at a time. But it doesn't begin with others, and it doesn't begin with pointing the finger at someone else. It begins with ourselves. And until we recognize that we can be the best that we can be in anything that we do, and I will not accept anything short of that in my own life until we get to that point, I don't really know where we're headed, and I'm quite concerned about where we are headed.
Well, you've made a statement that I think is very important, and that is, as adults, we need to lead by example. As adults, we need to be a presence wherever we are of example. And this is something that I think you step a long way towards doing that. I know I try to do that professionally, and I know a number of other people are really taking up a stronger positioning with this. But this needs to be done on all levels. It needs to be done throughout so many different levels of business. Again, there's an educational process that goes through this. And there's a wonderful woman whose name was Marva Collins, and I hope she's still with us. She would be in her 80s, I believe, right now. This is a woman that would teach children simple things about etiquette, communication, courtesy. And she worked with the poorest of the poor. She was a phenomenal teacher, absolutely phenomenal. And she said, always, you can, even if you do not have a lot of money, you can still look like $1 million. You don't have to be wealthy to look good.
That's right.
And I think that that's very important. And there's a very dear friend of mine. He's been gone for a number of years, Steve Agbaba. He was a broadcasting professional. And he used to talk about the two P's, personal pride. He said, what is it? Where is the personal pride? And I hear his voice ringing in my ear every once in a while when I encounter certain situations. And I think your book, Put That Cell Phone Down and Look Me in the Eye, is a book that could be given as a gift to young people, especially if they're getting ready to go off to college. They need to know they're entering into a world that's going to be different from what their parents perhaps have experienced, but there are still protocols that can make a difference. And why not have that extra ace in your life, in your pocket? And if you're someone that you're wanting to enter the business world, if you're wanting to know more about how to be successful as an individual, this book, it's not a difficult read. It's a very simple read. It's concise. It's to the point. I think you would find Brian Haggerty's information very valuable and useful. And I would say, pass it on. It is just so important. Brian Haggerty, your website is brianhaggertyspeaks.com. It's BrianHaggerty speaks, www.donnacebo.com. They'll find how to get your book, which is on Amazon. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us today.
Oh, thank you, Donna, so much. It was an absolute pleasure and an honor. I really enjoyed our time together, and I wish you the greatest holiday season for you and yours.
Thank you so much, Brian. The same to you. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Do you have a product or service that you would like people to know about? Internet radio is a powerful medium that can assist you in reaching people who like to shop online and pass by electronic word of mouth information about you, your products, and or services. The Donna Sebo Show reaches around the world, and you can be part of that enterprising network. For more information, contact Vision Broadcasting via Donna at DelphiInternational.com.
Or call 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I'm delighted you're able to join me today. I know it's so often during the holiday season, we're buzzing. Are you like me, where maybe half of your decorations are up and you're sort of looking at the others with one eye and going, do I really want to tackle that today? I feel as if I had just put everything away and bingo, this year just blitzed by and here I have to bring everything out again. And almost everyone I've chatted with, we joke about this, but they pretty much everybody I speak with says they feel the same way. It's as if time is speeding up for all of us. By the way, you can look forward to talking or hearing Susan Szymanski tomorrow. We're going to be talking about color, the power of color, but also auras. Now, what are auras? All of us know that they're energy emanations. But understanding what those energy emanations reflect can really be quite insightful. And Susan Szymanski, well, she spent 22 years studying many things, and she travels around the world giving seminars, doing all kinds of good stuff, sharing her knowledge with those that she meets. She's going to be with us tomorrow. Also on Friday, we're going to be talking with Ken Potty, and this is about a real person, codenamed Sunny. Yes, that's right. And then also Mountains of Fire. This is a story about a World War II veteran. Pearl Harbor Day is coming up on Saturday, and I always like to acknowledge those that have served, and so many of our veterans from the era of World War II who have powerful, powerful stories to share. Their stories should not be forgotten. They are, many of them, passing on. They're up in their 80s, many of them in their 90s. And I just consider it a real privilege when I can share some of their stories, because I think that we need to remember past history. If we don't pay attention to what's happened in the past too often, we'll repeat similar patternings in our present. And I think that we need to hear those stories and be aware of their experiences, because so many of them, well, I wouldn't wish them on anyone. But that's our lineup for today. All you have to do is check on show information for the Donna Sebo Show, and you'll find out about who is coming up. And I'm always delighted to have you join me at my broadcast table. I wanted to share a story with you today. And by the way, if you wanted to give me a buzz, 888-627-6008, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then let me tell you what I see, and you're welcome then to ask me about anything you like. Also, I came across an absolutely awesome recipe for biscotti. Now, I'm finding so many of my friends are giving up wheat. They're going to gluten-free foods. To my amazement, this recipe is gluten-free. So I wanted to share it with you because it is incredible. Not only the recipe, but also the story about how the recipe evolved. I just think it's incredible because of certain things that happen in our lives, we have to make shifts. And then it causes us to become innovative. And sometimes we get frustrated in the process because it means that we have to think a little differently. However, that frustration can lead to something amazing, and that is what I'm going to be sharing with you. Now, I wanted to share this real-life story. It's about a woman by the name of Julia, and she lives in Yakima, Washington. And this one night, and it was very dark, like it is at this time of the year. It gets dark very early here in the Pacific Northwest. The more north you go, that, you know, in the northern environments, that's what you're going to be experiencing. Shorter days, big time short, and longer, darker hours. She was hearing somebody crying out, "Help, please, somebody help." I mean, it was really, really loud. She could hear it, and she looks out the window. It's dark out. The moon was out. It's a woman's voice she's hearing. But she was totally perplexed. Where was it coming from? Now, sound has an amazing capacity to carry a very long distance. And she said, at the time that this particular experience happened to her, she was living in Oregon, and she was renting a garage apartment. And she said it was back and away from where the landlord lived. And there was an orchard and a small creek that was behind this small apartment. And she said, "Oh, my goodness," to herself, I wonder if somebody fell in the water. What if they're lost? Then she heard the woman's voice again. "Somebody, please help me." Very desperate. Well, she grabbed the phone and she called the police. She said, "I think a woman's being attacked." She gave them her address. She said, "Please hurry." The shouts just continued. She called the police again. The dispatcher said, "We have sent out an officer to your area. They can't find anything, but I'll send him back." She said, "Please do. They should have found this woman. She's desperate. I can hear her crying out for help." So out loud, she's in her apartment. She's, "I don't know where you are. Where are you?" Can you imagine the frustration she would feel because she just doesn't know? Well, she calls a third time. And the dispatcher put her in touch with a police officer. And he said, "Ma'am, we have gone out to your area. There are no screams. We don't see a sign of anything. Stop calling or we're going to file a complaint against you." Well, she was very frustrated. She just didn't know what to do. So she said to herself, "I'm going to go out on my own." So she got in her car. She drove to the orchard, rolled her window down. And every time she thought she was close, yes, the call was still going out. She could hear this woman's voice. But the sounds were getting a little further away. So she kept driving. She went past the orchard. She drove on a quarter mile, half a mile, a mile. All of a sudden, she sees a light. There's a glow, and she drives towards it. Here on this empty road, there is a car, and it had gone into a side ditch. Very, very deep side ditch. And standing next to it was a teenage girl. And she was just crying. She was in a panic. So this woman stops her car. She said, "Please, my boyfriend is stuck inside. Please, please help us." So she called the police. And she told them exactly where she was. Within minutes, two squad cars and an ambulance were there. And she was very upset because she said to the officers, "I told you I heard someone shouting. Why didn't you find her? She's just off the side of the road." The one officer said to her, "So you're the lady that's been bugging us this evening. Do you see where we're located?" And she just stopped and looked around. She didn't think anything of it. He said, "Ma'am, there's no way you could have heard her from inside your house. We are 3 miles away from where you are." Mm-hmm. But she heard this girl. Now, what could have gone on? 3 miles is a long way. She was hearing this woman's voice so clearly. She was hearing it. What that is a form of clairaudience. Now, it may never, ever affect her life again. But for whatever reason, she heard that call. And just like the police officer said, they responded to where she was, but she was unaware that the situation was 3 miles away. Fascinating story, don't you think? Stranger things have happened. Yes, they have. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Well, I promised you this recipe on biscotti, and I wanted to say that the woman that put this recipe together, when she got into her middle age cycle, she started having some physical problems. Her name is Jennifer Vahil, and she loved to bake. She has this love of baking, and boy, I can relate to it. There's nothing that's more satisfying than having your kitchen filled with these magnificent aromas of yummy goodies that you bring out of your oven. And she just loved it. Well, she was having some serious health problems, and her doctor diagnosed her, and he said, you know what? You're going to have to follow a gluten-free diet because you are in a situation here where your body just isn't tolerating wheat with the gluten in it. And she just didn't want to hear that. Well, I had to chuckle because when I found out about her story, she has this dog, Butch. And every time she would get in a baking mode and when she was having to go into learning how to work without the standard flour that she was so accustomed to deal with, Butch would always get the leftovers, and he was happy. He was one of her best taste testers. He just absolutely loved whatever she fixed, even if it didn't turn out so hot. So he was always attentive when she started getting out the pots and pans. Well, she had to start experimenting with sweet sorghum rice, tapioca, almond flour, garbanzo bean flour, amaranth, chestnut, millet. She said none of them were working. Her stuff would just go blah. She said the recipe she fixed with the garbanzo bean flour, oh, just idiot. But again, Butch was there. He loved them. Well, she said, I got to get past this. I've got to figure some things out. Now, during the holiday season, she was known for her biscotti. People just loved to get her biscotti as gifts. And good biscotti, oh, there's nothing like it. Sweetened with almonds, a little bit of sugar. It's great with cocoa or coffee, those hard cookies. It's an Italian something that I remember having when I was growing up, and it was just a joy. It was always a treat when it was made because it took a lot of time to make it, and you had to sort of double bake it and make sure that it was dry to a certain point. It was just wonderful. Well, finally, she decided she was going to start being grateful for everything that she could do. And this recipe came together. Now, this is what it is. This is the recipe. It's really good. It's a half a cup of sliced almonds, 1 cup of candied red cherries, 3 cups of tapioca flour, 1/2 cup of butter, 1 1/2 cups of sugar plus 1/4 cup for topping, 2 teaspoons of anise seed, 2 tablespoons of orange, zested orange, and it's going to be from 1 large orange or 2 small oranges, and fresh is best, 1 teaspoon of vanilla, 4 eggs plus 1 egg white, and you want to have a second egg white for brushing the biscotti with. Everything has to be at room temperature, remember, 1/2 cup of almond flour, 1/2 cup of white rice flour, 1 1/2 cups of sorghum flour, 1 cup of cornstarch, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 1 teaspoon baking soda, 2 teaspoons gar gum, that's G-U-A-R gum, and 2 tablespoons of brandy or rum. You could actually use a favorite liqueur orange liqueur is wonderful with this. Of course, this is optional. You don't have to use it. Now, I know we're taking a break. We're going to come back in just a moment, and I'll tell you how you put all of these ingredients together for some scrumptious biscottis that are good any time of the year, but especially during the holiday season. We'll be back in just a moment.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number is 888-627-6008 if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. A dog standing trial. Does that sound a little bit far-fetched? Well, I want to share a story with you about Rosie. This is a service dog who ended up setting a precedent in a courtroom. Now, there was a 15-year-old girl, her name was Jessica, who had been assaulted and raped by a gentleman, not a gentleman, by a man, and had to testify in court. Now, the fur person that went in with her into court, that was Rosie. It was an 11-year-old golden retriever. Now, the trial for this situation began so that the jury wouldn't see Rosie and be influenced by her presence. Now, they put Rosie, this beautiful golden retriever, near Jessica so she could pet Rosie to keep herself calm. Can you imagine what it would be like to have to go into a courtroom and have to be in front of a person that had violated you horribly, brutalized you, and you've got to testify against them? Well, it's very, very difficult. A 15-year-old young woman going through this, mature women have a difficult time with it. It's just horrific. Well, the person that trained Rosie to work with people knew that Rosie would be that element that it would enable this young woman, Jessica, to communicate that this man was the person that had assaulted, had raped her. Rosie became the first official courthouse dog in the state of New York. When I read this dog's story, I was just absolutely amazed. And there are two people, Dale Picard and his wife Lou, who are responsible for founding and actually continuing to train and educate people about how dogs can be educated and assist with disabilities of all kinds of types. And Rosie was meant to become a service dog to a handicapped individual. But Rosie's temperament, as they were training her, just wasn't working. He said it took us 90 days to teach her how to turn a light on, Well, obviously, Rosie wasn't suited to work with a disabled person, and they can start with puppies, and they know there's a personality type that really works well in working with people that have certain disabilities. Now, Rosie, though she wasn't going to be a service dog of that particular type, they noticed when they would go around to schools and do programs at schools regarding dogs and how wonderful they were, that Rosie could go into a classroom that was very agitated, maybe with special needs children, and the kids just loved her. She loved it. She just seemed to bring this energy into wherever she went that was very soothing. She knew which children needed extra attention. So what happened? It was during the next 8 years that she ended up being in speech and occupational therapy rooms. The students loved to talk to Rosie. They might not be able to communicate well with anybody else, but they loved talking with Rosie. Eventually, circumstances ended up leading her into the courtroom environment. There was a former Washington State prosecutor and veterinarian who really believed that dogs could assist crime victims to stay calm in a courtroom where they could testify if they needed to. And this is how Rosie came in to this environment. As Jessica's trial was coming, the stress that this young girl, or young woman, was under was just tremendous. Her attorney found out about this man who had been working with dogs to assist those that were in very difficult courtroom environments. Those trauma victims just would shut down, and they panic. This way, the dogs they found enabled the people that needed to testify to testify. They would come out of their panic zone. So what they did, Jessica and Rosie were trained together. Jessica had to pretend that she was in a witness box because the boxes are pretty small, pretty tight. And Rosie would sit in front of a barrier that was moved closer and closer and closer to her so that she could be more and more comfortable in that tighter space. Because of working with Rosie, Jessica's assailant was put away. And that is very good. Now, Rosie has passed away, but do you know what? Rosie had a younger sister, Ivy, and she also ended up being an in-house therapy dog at the children's home. And the children love Ivy. They get down with her on the floor. They just have the time of their lives, and they're happy. And they're able to work with whatever difficulties they've gone through, whatever ugliness has been in their life. This is something that is so important. This shows how one person can make a difference. In this case, it's a couple with a group called the Educated Canines. They started something because they saw a need. They worked with the animals that they loved. So many different ways of making this world a better place. For all of the ugliness that can be there, there are so many wonderful people that are contributing good things, making this world a brighter place because they decided they were going to do what they love to do and empowering other people. This is so vitally important. And you need to know that you can do the same thing in your own way, whether it is baking a better biscotti, teaching etiquette, speaking out and speaking up for better conditions in the world, or merely sharing a story like I do on the air. You know that you make a difference because of who you are. Stand proud, stand tall. Remember, always you're the master of your fate. You're the captain of your soul. And realize you're in charge of your space, being who you are at every moment in the best possible expression you possibly can be. God bless. Have a wonderful day. We'll be chatting tomorrow, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.